I don't know. I'm struggling with this.
Put the glasses on.
I don't think I've ever heard you in 180 episodes say you're struggling.
I can't piece together coherent thoughts. Should be make for a good pod times two.
Welcome to our Film Fathers Podcast, the definitive podcast about fatherhood, film, and fatherhood in film. This is Jelani, and with me as always are two guys dancing around in their grandma's panties, rubbing themselves in peanut butter, reading Guns and Ammo, and masturbating in their own feces, Martin and Brady.
He's a nutbag, and just because the fucker's got a library card doesn't make him Yoda.
Only in a world this shitty could you even try to say these were innocent people and keep a straight face. But that's the point. We see a deadly sin on every street corner and every home, and we tolerate it. We tolerate it because it's common, it's trivial. We tolerate it morning, noon, and night. Well, not anymore. I'm setting the example. What I've done is going to be puzzled over and studied and followed forever.
This week, we began our descent into the dark noirness of this month and focused our attention on Finding John Doe. More specifically, the movie Seven, a David Fincher-directed thriller with Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, and Kevin Spacey as a fingerprintless villain. With one of the most memorable scenes/lines from a movie ever, how great is this movie still?
It was always the one I said is my favorite movie for a long time, but I really probably only seen it once or twice. It's not a movie you keep popping back in.
For sure.
But it was a really good rewatch.
It's so good.
It's damn near perfect.
Really good.
Well, yeah, perfect. It's from start to finish, it's hard to find a flaw.
Yeah. I mean, like, literally from start, like what I remember about it the first time, like the opening credits.
So
amazing.
I'm watching it the first time in a long time, and I'm like, oh man, it's very Nine Inch Nails esque.
Industrial.
And then it ends on like, we bring me closer to God, and I'm like, and it is.
Yeah, it's the start of the Reznor,
the Reznor
Fincher, yeah,
relationship.
I think.
For sure. It's crazy how, I mean, I remember kind of loving this movie too. I don't know if I ever necessarily thought it was like my favorite movie, but I think it's probably forgotten from that list, and it shouldn't be because it delivers. Like, the acting is great. I think the writing is really good. The story, I mean, I think it's probably just the genre is probably what keeps it from being on lists like that. But I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. I think this was one of the first movies that I like recognized as a good film. Like, you know, growing up, I would watch like all the action films and whatever. And I'm like, oh yeah, these are fun, whatever. But then like you watch this and you're just like, that was really good. Like when you get done with it and you're like, the twist at the end, if you've never seen it, and like having the whole thing play out, you're like, wow, that was really good.
I remember watching it, I would say probably like 16 years old, and the end was like a lot to take.
Yeah.
Right? Like, apparently, I mean, I remember it being like shocking, disturbing. I don't want to misuse the word scary, but it was like, oh my God, I don't know if like how to even react to this, because it was felt unlike anything else you saw.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, we didn't see a lot of Brad Pitt before this, and then you see that ending and he acts it so well, right? It's all in his face, it's all in the way he talks. And really this whole movie, like this was the first movie, and this and 12 Monkeys were the two that I remember. I'm like, I love Brad Pitt as an actor because he chose cool roles.
He went straight from the 12 Monkeys. Yeah. I saw they were like finishing up because they knew they only had him for a certain amount of time, and he was like straight on. And in my head, without looking, I was like, oh, was this the upward trajectory spike for him? And really, it's arguable that it could be, and I think the performance probably – the ramifications are felt down the road. He was coming off of Legends of the Fall.
And Thelma and Louise before that.
Right, but I think in terms of like an actual role.
Yeah, where he was the star.
And River Runs Through It was well before that. So was in 92, which I don't think I saw at the time. I've since seen it a lot, and I really like that movie. And Legends of the Fall. So I think the trajectory was started already, but I think, to your point, the way he – that's when he was like, oh my God, he's – you know, I think he was heart-throbby. from like right. Legends of the Fall and stuff, and Thelma and Louise and stuff before that.
So he could have been leading man in safe movies, but instead he chose this and 12 Monkeys, which for, again, for me, being however old I was, 13, I was like, yeah, this is
my He went seven, Legends of the Fall, seven, 12 Monkeys, both the same year, but they list them that way. Sleepers.
The Devil, is really good.
The Devil Zone, 7 years in Tibet is where he veered back into blonde, beautiful man. Meet Joe Black.
Meet Joe Black, same.
Yeah.
And a year later.
Claire Forlani.
And exactly. From what else do you know her from? Mallrats.
Yeah.
And then a year later in Fight Club. And so it's.
With Fincher again.
With Fincher again.
Claire Forlani is also in The Rock. She's Sean Connery's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine, but I think that it's resounding. What we know her from is Mallrats.
That's what we love her from.
Yeah, just like going back and rewatching this was just like, this is just good. And the way that, you know, the way that it was cast, you have Morgan Freeman as the, you know, the cop that's getting too old for this shit, but just still like, hey, I'll stick around because I know what's going to happen. Like, I can see it. And, you know, having Arlie Ermey as the police chief, who's just like, no, that's not happening. He's like, yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, he said Arlie Ermey, he auditioned for John Doe. And they were like, they didn't felt like he was just going to do it one, you know, he was unsympathetic. There was nothing there except for Arlie Ermey, but they liked him. And so they just had him fill a different role.
Yeah. And what a year for Kevin Spacey, right? 95, Usual Suspects. Playing Kaiser Soze.
Well, he was another one. I was like, oh, was this like? I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, was this a big year for him? And it was. You're not wrong. Like, Usual Suspects was 95. Before that, I think Swimming with Sharks was well reviewed. I don't know.
I didn't watch it until years later. Yeah, but yes, it wasn't a big movie. It was like an indie movie.
But then it was like Usual Suspects, which he won an Oscar for. So I mean, he was officially on the map.
He won for that.
He beat Pitt. They were saying, ironically enough,
but that was supporting actor, right?
Supporting. Yeah. And then Outbreak and Seven both came out the same year. And then A Time to Kill, L.A. Confidential, which is a great movie we'll be doing this month. And Negotiator, it's like he, same thing.
Cashed
like,
in and started
on a wide ride, on a wild ride at that point.
Yeah. Dumb bastard.
Yeah. yeah. What are you going to do? We don't need to dive too deep into the, I think we've touched on before the Kevin Spacey of it all. But I remember, one thing I remembered about this movie, which I was kind of looking up some of it as well, was that it was a planned approach that they didn't mention him in the opening credits or like on the advertising because it was going to be a surprise that he was playing
the villain.
And I was thinking, I'm like, I don't think you could get away with that anymore just because of the information
people would know.
Age that were the IMDb of it all, right? Like everyone knows everything about who's in what and who's going to be in what and what the next five roles somebody is. But it's pretty cool to have that happen and have it be a surprise. And, you know, even to the point where he's the photographer and you don't quite see him or in real time, so you don't necessarily know it. And I think you can hear his voice when you know.
Like disguised it a bit, but yes, it was him.
Right. And I felt like that was just a really cool, a cool thing to do. And I saw he was like on board with it, but also part of the reason he was on board was he realized he didn't have to do any like promotion for it at all. I was like, oh, that's not, I get that.
Yeah. That's what he wanted. Can we talk about how dark this movie is?
That's why I included it in the intro thing.
Noir, cinematically, sure. As well as like the subject matter,
there was a style.
I meant
the visual aspect. I didn't dive too deep, but I saw there was a visual tool they were using to kind of bring that out. But also, like the rain, they said it rained the first day, and they were like, "Let's just have it rain every day, so we don't have to worry about like back and forth shots."
Yeah,
it's, like,
yeah.
It's just gonna rain,
right?
And I was like, "Yeah,
it's a rainy week." I mean, it all happens,
but that fits the dark aspect.
Yeah,
so.
But even the apartments, right? Like every single apartment, they're all with flashlights.
Barely have
lights.
None
of them have lights.
Right.
But they mentioned it. You know, it's not like you said we're missing some light in here.
I think the only one that didn't have lights was Pride. Because she was in like the all white.
Yeah.
Gluttony didn't have lights initially.
Or no, like they didn't need light.
Oh.
But it actually was well lit.
Yeah, it was
and
well lit.
And then the office, too, wasn't too dark.
The office was. Because it was during the day. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, you go back and you look at it, and like My favorite scene of the whole movie is the library scene where he goes and they're like, the guys are out there playing.
I love it too. That checks out.
Yeah. And then, so.
It's such a cool looking library too.
Right.
Like all the little like green, like lawyer lamps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for the longest time, like I couldn't figure out what song was playing. Like this was.
And then it shows up on the subtitles if you listen, right?
Well, so before that.
It. It's Bach, right?
Yeah.
Didn't he say it's Bach?
Oh, he did.
The guy says it.
I don't. Does he say it's Bach?
That's how I know it's Bach.
Oh. Well, the song is called "Air on a G String."
Yeah.
Oh, which is just kind of funny, but
why?
But before like that, like when I first not first saw it because it didn't exist, but when Shazam came out, remember Shazam?
Yeah,
nice. I would like Shazam it.
I think it's still around.
Yeah,
yeah. I think people still use it, but. I would Shazam it. Like I'd go and get the DVD out and play that part, and then Shazam it just to like find that song. But yeah, that like
should just try remembering it.
It's just soothing. You like the
yeah.
Like
it was just calm, out. Relaxing, and it fit that scene so well. Like him looking up all the information about like Dante's Inferno and the Seven Deadly Sins and
Geoffrey Chaucer, The Parson's Tale.
Yeah, all of it was just like this is excellent.
Have you guys ever read any of that stuff, Dante's Inferno
No.
We did the Canterbury Tales in English.
Canterbury
Tales,
yeah. I don't remember reading the Parson's Tale, but I remember reading a couple of different ones.
Yeah.
But that was the last one, apparently. And that's the biggest one where he's preaching. I looked it up, too, because I never read that one. But it's like the sermon or the preaching aspect of the deadly sins. And that's the one where he talks about that the most.
Yeah.
I saw the foreshadowing when he was looking all this stuff up. And there was one literally with a head next to a headless body, the head next to it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I watched it, and I was like,
oh. Right. This time I noticed I never noticed it before. 100%. Yeah, exactly.
What about the foreshadowing at the dinner table when they're sitting there and Morgan Freeman's wrapping his hand with the napkin?
Yeah. And that's what
Brad Pitt ends up breaking his hand later on and has the wrap around it for the rest of the movie.
Well, you know he really did that.
When okay, so that was
so, right.
It's in the chase scene when he's chasing Spacey. Mm. He actually one day his hand went through the windshield. And he had to have, had to go to the hospital. And then there were times he was literally like putting his hands in his pocket, trying not to like showcase that there was visible injury.
Because that was one of my questions. That's my technicality is when in the chase did he actually break his hand?
Well, I don't think they show it when he literally did it, but I think part of it.
Right. Yeah. Because you're assuming that in that chase, because when he gets back to the apartment, like he's got his hand tucked and all that stuff, and he's holding it.
Yeah.
But I was like, that I don't see how he could have broken it, but
apparently, it literally happened.
There was glass.
I don't know if he broke it, but he put his hand went through a windshield.
Yeah.
During the chase scene.
How about little elements of humor when he goes, "We got a dead dog over here," and they look over at Spacey. He's like, "I didn't do that."
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so much tension in that whole ending scene. And the music, too. It's just this really repetitive,
I think it
droning.
May have won for, like, score.
Yeah, I think it was, like, Howard Shore or something.
Yeah, I think
right. And he's done a bunch of. I've seen that name before. You're our score guy, Jelani, so you tell me everything he's done. I remember thinking this time around, paying attention, knowing what's coming, but, like, the score is very... just very ominous. Like you're waiting for something to happen, and there's no release in it until very at the end. But then love that part that he just makes a little joke, or they throw in a little joke like that. Doesn't really ease the tension, but it does a little bit.
So. Yeah, I would also say the other funny parts, well, not funny parts, but like humor that you're saying, right?
Funny how.
When he's trying to read the books and he's like in the car and he's getting all frustrated, and the other cop comes and throws him the Cliff Notes. You're like, you're about right. You're a Cliff Notes guy.
So I had a note saying like I really was liking a lot of the writing, but I think most of the writing that I liked or was enjoying was Somerset or Morgan Freeman's character. I thought his dialogue was just really, really perfect for that character. And I felt like, he was natural at it too, which was great. Pitts, I felt like, and probably intentionally so, were kind of more, not dumbed down, but like he was clearly not as intelligent on a well-read level.
He's the hothead,
yeah,
sure, right? He's Wrath.
And And so I was just like, I still enjoyed it. Cause I think that was intentional, but I just, a lot of the, even when I was like picking out quotes for the movie, I'm like, Somerset. I'm like, God, he just had a lot of lines that were, I felt like really, really perfect for his scenes that he was in.
Yeah. And I think the way that Morgan Freeman played it, right? Just being methodical and thoughtful. Especially when he's delivering the lines to him and, you know, he's like going through, he's like, listen, can't just rush into here. Like, we got to think about this and, you know, make sure we're looking at all the possible, you know, elements that are going to be involved, because John Doe has already thought of those. Like, he knows where we're going. He knows how this is all going to play out. Like, you have to realize that he's done this. You can't just go in and go after it.
Yeah.
Like, think it through. And it was just very cool to see, like, you know, a detective who has that capability of like, hey, I'm going to take my time because I know what I need to do to get this done. And, you know, you have the hothead detective, you have the police chief who's like, well, you know, this isn't really happening. You have Richard Roundtree, RIP, the DA, who's Shaft. Like, we're gonna get him. And you're
a
recent
passing.
Yeah. So
On the writing note, before I forget, so I think no one knew Andrew Kevin Walker when he wrote this. I think I said he was like, he wrote it and he couldn't even get people interested because he was a no name. He's like, he was writing letters after letter to get someone to even give him a chance. And obviously it put him on the map, rightfully so, but
The killer coming up.
The killer is coming up, which is Netflix movie. Again. Yeah, Fincher and Michael Fassbender. So, which I'm interested in watching.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like you have to take every
Netflix
with a grain movie of salt. Exactly. Did you see any of his other stuff? It looks like he wrote 8mm.
Which I've seen 8mm and Sleepy Hollow. Yeah, 8mm was Nicolas Cage. It was
and
pretty
Joaquin
dark
Phoenix.
Too.
Right.
Spot a 8mm snuff film. Okay. So yeah, it's pretty dark subject matter. It wasn't anywhere near as good as Seven. I think a lot of people were expecting that movie to be great. It's not bad though.
I mean, this is his first movie after this.
Yeah, yeah.
Decent amount of pressure on expectation.
I went to the theater for it. I remember, but it was pretty dark without any of the, I don't know,
the Wolf Man.
Okay. Yeah, is that the
Benicio?
One with Jack?
I think it's Benicio del Toro.
Oh, okay, yeah, I've seen that too.
Wolf. I think it's Jack.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Is it Anthony Hopkins and Benicio del Toro, I think?
I love Benicio del Toro. He's another one from after Usual Suspects that I was like, anything he does, I love.
Yeah. Anthony Hoffman, rated R movie, maybe? The Wolfman? From our crossover group today? we all missed an opportunity.
I think we all
Emily Blunt is in that movie as well.
The Wolfman?
Yeah. I saw that she's on the poster. I was like, is it? It is.
That's that Universal reboot. Trying to get the monsters back.
That's right. Yeah, they tried to get all the classics, The Mummy, and
Speaking of studios, I saw something, and I think we've talked about this recently in October. So New Line Cinema.
This was New Line, yeah.
But they said
the house that Freddie built.
The house that Freddie built. This was considered their first like A level production where they were actually able to attract like A-list stars and directors. And I feel like director's a long one because I don't think Fincher was – now Fincher's considered an A-list, right. But at the time he was – I think he did Alien 3. But from a cast standpoint, they did. They had really big names across the board. So it's interesting because obviously we did mention that it was the house that Freddie built, but also I think maybe Vault – we talked about earlier like potentially Pitt or Spacey. Like, and actually I think put New Line on a upward trajectory.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I love – loved the 90s, loved the mid to late 90s for movies because just you couldn't watch a movie without it being something special. Everything along the way, The Usual Suspects, Seven, LA Confidential.
It does feel like it's impossible that there were this many,
so many
awesome movies. Like for reasonably a lack of a better term, because but legitimately awesome movies.
Yeah, yeah, the beginning of Bryan Singer, David Fincher, all the Coen brothers. Great movies were coming down the road, you know, Big Lebowski and Fargo.
So I don't think anyone has
Quentin Tarantino.
I don't think anyone has a problem with the Freeman Pitt pairing, especially you got the old young Black, white, you got, in terms of actors, you got stars on both levels. But the almost.
Oh.
The almost.
Playing that game?
There was a lot of them. I'm not going to go through them all.
Yeah.
But the almost some pairing. Ones. It was Pacino and Denzel.
Yeah.
And Denzel thought it was way too dark, and so did Pacino. And then Denzel said he regretted it.
I think. So I saw there was a video with him and Jamie Foxx, and he was talking about like roles that he regretted. And he's like, yeah, I was up for the role for Seven. And he's like, and I thought it was too dark, and I turned it down. And he's like, and then I watched Seven. And he's like, damn it.
Oh, he could have. Yeah, he could have done it.
Well, he was Pitt.
He would have.
Yeah, I know.
And
I'm saying, so, I could see it.
Well, that's where I had a hard time because I was like.
Like Ricochet, Denzel.
Pitt was young, dumb. Like, again, I feel like maybe it's just different. Maybe the characters are a little bit more different if that's the case. But yeah, it would have been interesting at a Pacino Denzel combination.
I don't know. I don't know if I could see Pacino as much as I could see Denzel for some reason in the Pitt character.
See, and to like Brady's point, I don't know if Denzel would have been able to play the hothead. Even at that age. No, because I feel like he still was calculated and like thoughtful.
All right.
That was kind of where I was at. But
yeah.
I mean, obviously they're great. So maybe they just do whatever has to be done.
I mean, he could have done it.
Yeah.
Like, he could have played it, but I just, like, would you have believed it? Like, you're not really just going to fly off at the handle, Denzel. Like, you're going to think this one through.
I could literally see him doing it.
And they said Spacey was, like, 2 days before filming, they finally, he was cast. But it was more of a money thing. They literally couldn't, like, afford him, or they wouldn't pay it. And whatever he was asking, and Pitt and Fincher were like, Pitt, I saw something, I don't know if he said, like, I'm not going to do it unless, but, and Spacey's fucking great.
Yeah.
I mean.
Everyone.
I like that.
Everyone, every line.
It's really good. Like, he has the Kaiser limp. He must have just been stuck with that. He just like, he's like mentally he couldn't get past. He's like, I don't know. I'm limping in everything I'm doing right now. But he, I just, man, he is really, really good in this movie. And I think they said something. He's like, do you think I should shave my head? And Fincher's like, if you do it, I do it. And then they both had shaved heads for the rest of the.
Fincher had a shaved head, huh?
Yeah. So, the other thing I thought was really interesting, all those notebooks in his place, real.
They spent 2,400 notebooks.
2 months, people were literally filling out entire notebooks full.
Why?
There's an argument. That's a fair question. They're really committing to the.
Commit to the bit.
To the bit. But yeah, they legitimately. Method. Every
went full method.
Every single. I don't think it was Spacey, but it was literally. Okay. Like, every notebook was fully written out and fully.
That's a wild. Piece of trivia.
Do you imagine if you're just like on the crew, they're like, hey, take this notebook home and write whatever
you want. Just write
the
most random shit you can think of.
And fill the entire thing and bring it back.
Because even the story they read is, the anecdote they read is kind of pointless and dumb. Like, he throws up on a guy on the subway.
You might have gotten something better if you used one of the other people's stories.
Maybe it was just whatever one they grabbed. Just like, pick one and read a tidbit.
They're trying to recreate the works of Shakespeare. You know, the 10,000 monkeys and 10,000 typewriters.
It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times. Get out of here.
I have to give shout-outs to two character actors. They have two prominent character actors. One is Leland Osler.
Dude.
I
feel like he could have been nominated for an award.
Yeah.
Like, that, whatever, 2 minutes or 1 minute is insanely good.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, oh, the PTSD that guy has for ever.
I mean, I know, I was like, dude, this guy is like legit. That's, and I know him from other movies, obviously, at this point, but
Very Bad Things is what I think of, I think.
Very Bad Bone Collector.
Yeah. Okay. He's also in the Taken series.
Yeah.
He's been some things.
And but then
obviously never like vaulted up into like star level or
right.
anything. Well, probably because his name's Leland, but for being honest.
And then John C. McGinley.
Yeah. Did not remember him in this movie.
I totally remember. Somebody call somebody. Yeah, I remember that line because I love Johnny C. He's the best.
I don't know if I love that line, but
he had
somebody
a big,
call somebody.
Yeah, I think it's just you really that like helpless or like?
I think it worked for the ending of the movie.
You want to take the technicality? I love that they go out to this very remote place, and while McGinley is like, well, we could guarantee there's no ambush here, as they stop by the only building yeah. around where there could actually be right. an ambush.
The little like trailer or whatever. The trailer. Yeah. They're like, there's nothing here. I'm like, there's literally something right there.
There could be people in there. A literal ambush could be inside that thing. Everywhere else, we can assure that there's no ambush. Right here, not the spot.
And he's like, keep it on the keep your crosshairs on the guy in red. Yeah. Yeah. Who else are they going to keep the crosshairs on? How many people are out there?
Yeah. I mean, not to take away from, again, that was yeah. small potatoes, but it was, and we could talk about it. Like, let's talk about that final, the scene, the one, the line, scene. The scene. I think what most people know, if you ask.
I say it every time there's a box.
What do you say, Martin?
What's in the box?
What's in and the box?
It usually gets a chuckle.
I mean, if anyone knows something, a line from this movie, that's what it is, yeah. right? Yeah. Like, and that's where you have the plan come to fruition, right?
Yeah. You can't John see Doe's the whole plan. Thing yet.
Right. And he said, like, I'm right where I want to be. Like, you guys didn't, you know, you didn't catch me, but they're obviously think they have, John Doe has the upper hand.
What I wonder now, again, being, having seen it over many years and only a few times, but really remembering everything, when do you think he picked, like, Mills just got transferred. Like, he's only been there.
Yeah, I don't think he picked days. Him. I think he was whoever was going to be.
Whatever cop it was going to be.
Yeah.
Was gonna
it's how I looked at it.
Find somebody that he was close with, hopefully had a wife.
Because yeah. he even said, when he calls to, like, commend them and say, like,
yeah, I
he says,
you,
right. Or, I mean, he says, I hit one of you. He literally yeah. says, like, I he didn't even know. He may have known their name, but he didn't know who he actually hit or what, you know. And so, obviously, he got the name from when he yelled at the picture. He said Mills, M-I-L-L-S, yeah. so, like, yeah. he could get that information and then figure that out. I mean, yeah, maybe if they're single or whatever, it's like, what
but
do you do?
Because he'd been planning this, right, for at least a year because
at
of
at least
the,
a year.
And the sloth guy. That's probably the most, I mean, hard to say which was the most terrifying, most yeah. memorable scene, but that's up there in just shock value of the guy that's been alive for
a year.
What do you say? If you shine a flashlight in his eyes, he'd probably die of shock right now. I'm like, holy shit.
Which they did, by the way.
Yeah, I've heard in about that too. They turn on the lights.
Yeah, they literally
get up, scumbag.
So him, like, none of the actors knew he was going to be alive.
Oh, is that
so
right?
That reaction
that's
was
so good.
I know. You want a natural reaction, and that was it.
Man.
That's awesome.
And that dude, that's a real dude. They said he was they were promoting or call the call sheet was for like a 90-pound man, and the guy who they picked mm-hmm. was 96 pounds, and Fincher joked like, "Oh, you're a little heavier than we were hoping for," and he cut 6 pounds. And, I mean, he's like crazy thin, obviously, yeah. but yeah, that's a lot. Like the gluttony, I mean, there's a lot. Like right out of the gate, the gluttony is like,
yeah,
holy
it's also pretty
shit,
shocking
this guy
right
is, yeah. you know, and that's where I feel like you're immediately into like, what is this?
This is like nothing we've ever seen.
Right,
right. Yeah. And it's really, again, I have to think that Fincher knew he had something special on his hand because this script is obviously amazing. But then you add the great acting, but you also, there's a lot of really good, the way it's shot. Like there's a lot of overhead angles and I don't know. It's just very, very thoughtful.
There was
through,
a really
think,
cool,
in his direction.
One of the cool shots I really liked was the dual interrogation rooms
mm-hmm.
that are both separated. I'm like, I just thought, I mean, nothing crazy there, but like, I really enjoyed that perspective in the way they shot that.
And like right at the end when he asked him where Somerset's going to be, and he's just like a little bit over me, kind of looks back and says, "I'll be around." There's just and that to me felt like some type of noir throwback to
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know something with
like the detective that can't fully retire, like he's yep, going to be there because
exactly.
something else is going to happen where you're yep. going to need to call him back, and you know,
and it's him and the captain I think walking away. It's kind of like Casablanca with Humphrey Bogart and whoever else walking into the away from the tarmac. You guys have never seen it, but you should.
I'm gonna guess Lauren Bacall.
Oh, that's a great guess.
Is it Ingrid
Bergman? Ingmar is Ingmar. The director. I don't know if they're related, but Bergman. You got Bergman. The Bergman right. Ingrid.
So unsurprisingly, and I meant to say this, so unsurprisingly, the studio wanted a different ending.
I did hear about that.
And
that,
didn't want the head in the box type of thing.
I mean, it just wouldn't be this. It wouldn't be as talked about and well remembered.
Fincher, I think, and Pitt both again. They said we're doing, and But I saw one little anecdote story where Fincher was said at like one of the screenings, people were walking out being like, "What the fuck is that?" Like he said, but most of the questions were like, "Hey, do you want to watch a new Brad Pitt Morgan Freeman movie?" And like Pitt's coming off Legends of the Fall, and it's like, and you get in there and it's that and. Not at all what people were expecting.
I'm pretty sure test audiences always make movies worse. Whenever they test them and then they change them afterwards.
But that's part of it, right?
People always want to see the original.
You're asking people to – you're setting up a false expectation by getting them in there with a hopes of seeing a heartthrob, a young new heartthrob that's on the scene.
Right.
And someone else they know. And it's
Morgan
like,
Freeman?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, so literally the whole viewing experience is altered because they either think they're getting something that's not, and then you're walking out and be like, well, would you ever watch a horror – not horror, a thrilling movie like
horror? I think when you ask people their opinion too, of course they're going to be like, well, here's what I would do. They feel like they're special because they could tell you –
Well, the other thing was the network – or the studio was like, no, like we can't – you know, it's got to be like – that was much more cleaned up and like, oh, it can't be. We're not going to put her head in the box. Like, it could be she's kidnapped and then they're chasing him down. And I was like, there was a bunch of different endings. And I'm like, God, all those are awful. Or they're awful. Cookie cutter.
Yeah, they're predicted. Yeah. You know? And yeah, so Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt, and Fincher all said they wouldn't be in the movie if they didn't change it back to the original ending. Yeah. So,
well, what's funny about that too, though, Fincher said he wasn't even supposed to get that ending. That was part of what it was written, but when they sent it to him, they had thought they sent him a changed version, but he got that version, and then he was like, well, I was never letting go of that.
Yeah.
Because that was by far the best option, but he wasn't even supposed to ever know it.
It just works. It makes the movie as memorable as it is. And
don't mess with Andrew Kevin Walker.
Yeah.
You want a fun fact about that?
Sure.
Fincher, he... so Fincher obviously had an appreciation for him, and the detectives in Fight Club, Andrew, Kevin, and Walker.
Oh.
nice little call. I figured you would.
That's very cool.
Another little call. This is for Jelani. The diner where Freeman and Gwyneth sit. It's in the booth right next to Ethan Hawke and Denzel in Training Day.
I was going to say that diner looks very familiar. I think it might also be the same diner in Old School.
It's Quality Coffee Shop in downtown L.A.
Yeah. What town are they in?
They never say.
I know the answer.
I know.
Yeah.
But is there an answer?
There's not. They said there's little tidbits. Like one of the places it says New York Pizza, but there is a sign in L.A. that actually just says New York Pizza. It's like a style pizza.
It seemed way more New York than LA to me.
It does, but I think they said it's actually if you want a true answer, it's Los Angeles because of multiple different things they shot and used. And I mean, it literally shot there. But
I mean, where do you go in New York to find mountains like that, like desert and mountains?
There's no subway in LA, is there?
There is.
I think there's.
Yeah, it's just not used by anybody. It doesn't go anywhere people really want it to go because the city built in a different direction.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is a subway. It's just
I had no idea.
They use it in the Italian Job. Use the subway tunnels.
You remember?
I do not remember.
The Mini Cooper race. They literally drop them underneath. And
oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You're familiar.
That was okay. All right.
It's a subway. It cuts right in front of a train. It's underground.
It's very. It does seem more noir to be L.A. than, you know, West Coast. I think that's where Sam Spade always was, San Francisco and stuff. But, okay.
Did you know that the you don't ever see it, but the fake Gwyneth Paltrow head has been used in a movie?
House of 1,000 Corpses? I don't know.
It was one of the 8 heads in the duffel bag?
It was used in Contagion.
Oh,
when for her scene in the morgue, they
because she died right in the beginning of that, right?
It's an autopsy scene, and they put her. That's the head they use is from Seven.
I was thinking at this time, if it would have more or less impact if they ever showed the head. I'm pretty sure it's right to just not show.
No, I think it's good to leave that mystery again. That noir aspect of it, where you're like, you don't never.
You don't ever see.
Never.
You don't never. You don't double never double negative it.
No, you never see the head, but you like you know that that's what's in the box, and then you see the reaction to what.
Yeah, I think it's more powerful that way. Otherwise, you'd be talking about, oh, it didn't
look like her. Fake. Yeah, that was not a real head.
Yeah, so much more impactful to not know what's in Marcellus Wallace's briefcase.
It looked better. Have you, either of you ever seen the movie Solace from 2015?
Sounds familiar. But no.
Anthony Hopkins, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Colin Farrell, Abby Cornish.
Love Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Colin Farrell and Abby Cornish, both from Seven Psychopaths.
Seven Psychopaths.
So that movie is, in 2002, New Line proposed a sequel named Eight.
Of course they did.
That would be based on a repurposed spec script titled Solace by Ted Griffin about a psychic serial killer who's pursued by a similarly psychic detective, Somerset. The idea was abandoned after principal cast and crew, including Morgan Freeman and Pitt, expressed zero intention to return to a sequel. Fincher said, "I would be less interested in that than I would in having cigarettes put out in my eyes."
Wow.
The script was made into a standalone thriller named Solace, which was critical and commercial failure.
24% on Rotten Tomatoes. Why is 6 scared of 7?
7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Just curious. I wondered if either of you had ever.
No, I'd never watched
inadvertently it. Saw the sequel, but.
It's always disappointing when you see good actors, like really good actors. Hopkins, Farrell. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan
in
just a shit movie.
Right. Like, hey, somebody got it made. So
maybe it's good. I don't know. Maybe I got to give it a shot.
Kudos to you for getting it. Yeah. Kudos to you for getting it made. It may not be my cup of tea, but I give you credit for that.
It was, all in all, I think unsurprisingly, we all agree this movie is not only does it hold up, but I legitimately think if asked the question, I think it will pop into my head more frequently now that I think it is one of the best movies.
I think it's always been in kind of like a rotating top 10 for me, but again, because it's so dark and I don't want to revisit it always, but it's seared into my brain. Like I know all these.
Yeah. Lines. I think that's just part of it, right? It's a hard to like, oh, I'm going to watch 7 this weekend. Like, I was like, oh, Mary's gone. I'm going to watch 7.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
As always, hell, love costs. It takes effort and work. But liking, subscribing, and following our Film Fathers takes hardly any work at all. Thanks, and go to bed.